Welcome to the Waking Up Human podcast, a place where we can get spiritual on the human journey and get human on the spiritual journey. I am your host, Mandy Trapp. In this very first episode, this solo cast where I'll be sharing some of the vulnerable details in my life around my own experiences of failure, of reinvention, and of course, all of the lessons that I've learned along the way. Get ready to hear about closing the doors to my very first yoga studio after falling for an embarrassing internet scam, and then finding the courage to reinvest over $500,000 just a few years later into an even bigger and riskier venture. But through it all, one thing became extremely clear, that I needed to keep moving forward. We all have within us the inner driver that no matter what keeps us on the road and is always pulling us forward to that next experience. I call this my inner guide, call it my soul, and the more that I listen to it, the less worried that I am with where it's taking me, so long as it's just always taking me. To keep moving forward is progress, and to be continually progressing, well, in my opinion, this is fulfilling the greatest spiritual desire that we all have. I know that you're going to love this episode and that it's going to give you some really big things to think about with respect to where you came from, where you are, and of course, where you're going. Enjoy the show. Hi, friends. Welcome to the Mandy Trapp Podcast 3.0. And I'm calling this 3.0 for perhaps very obvious reasons. This is not the very first iteration of this podcast. For those of you that have perhaps scrolled down or maybe even listened to the few of the archived episodes that are here, you would see that I actually began this podcast in February of 2019. That was a little while ago, but I'm pretty sure, and I'd need to count, but maybe I only launched 8 episodes or so. And that was kind of my first foray, if you will, into podcasting. But I wasn't doing that kind of as my sole venture, if you will, in terms of getting online and sharing. In fact, at exactly the same time, I was going live every single Sunday morning on Facebook at 8 o'clock my time, and it was called Soulful Sunday. And the primary intention for those Soulful Sundays was to maybe do church a little bit differently. If I can remember back that far, that was about 5.5, almost 6 years ago. And as a meditation teacher and as a spiritual teacher, I had a lot of people coming to me all the time, really desiring that opportunity to very consciously and ritualistically connect to spirit, to learn, but to not necessarily do it within the context of church, right? There could be maybe some kind of past relationship to that. There tended to be a lot of trauma and just a lot of drama that people wanted to get away from. And so I had promised that, hey, listen, I'll do this for a month and, you know, hop on and maybe share some spiritual concepts with you and create this space. And that month ended up being 5.5 years, right? And so at some point in time during that, because my life wasn't complicated enough at the time, raising kids. And then I had a meditation center and ran education programs as well. So yeah, not much going on here. And I thought, yeah, okay, cool. I'm going to launch a podcast at exactly the same time. How hard can that be? And I mean, if you've ever tried to launch a podcast or to do anything of the nature, you realize that there's a lot more that goes into it than simply sitting down and talking. And it really felt as a very simple solution for me at the time, just to hit pause on that podcast and to keep going. Was much, I will just say, path of least resistance for me, believe it or not, waking up every single Sunday, no matter where it was in the world, and opening up the screen on my phone and just having some conversations, most importantly, about what was in the field, what was going on. And even as these different episodes begin to roll forward with this new reinvented and upgraded version of the podcast, it is absolutely critical and important to me that I don't pre-plan months and months in advance. And the reason for that is because there's always something that is happening energetically in the field. Okay. In the field. Now, if you don't know what I mean by the field, it's like in the world, right? There's always things that are happening, and believe it or not, you and the experience that you are having in your life is very intricately interconnected with what your neighbor is experiencing and your best friend is experiencing. And, you know, on some level as well, somebody on the other side of the world who perhaps circumstantially, I'm already stumbling on my words right now, according to their circumstances, is that their life can look very, very different from the outside looking in. But the theme of what it is that they're navigating is going to be very similar to what you're navigating as well. And I cannot wait to prove this to you. And the very first, perhaps, level of proof, if you will, or clue that this is true, is just for you to think about those times or those moments in your life where you're either celebrating some great, big, beautiful success that you've experienced or accomplished, or maybe you're really navigating some deeper struggle that you have going on in your life. And what is the first thing that we want to do? We want to share, right? We want to share our successes and we want to share our struggles. So we pick up our phone and, you know, we get on there and we call our friends, we call our family, we send text messages, you know, whatever your form of communication is, but we want to share. So share, and this desire to share is, I'll say, clue number one, that we are deeply connected. The next piece is that when you share, how often do you hear it come back from whoever it is that you're sharing with? And they say, oh my God, really? You too? Ah, I'm experiencing exactly the same thing. Or how wonderful that that just happened for you. I can't wait to tell you about my day and what just happened for me. Or perhaps it's the other side of that, right? Is that, yeah, I'm so sorry that that is going on for you right now. Interestingly enough, me too. And then we say, wow, isn't that crazy? Isn't that amazing? What a coincidence that this is going on. I'm going to say to you right now, it's not a coincidence. In fact, just even the word coincidence means that there's two separate incidents and that they are coinciding, they are clashing with one another, and that there's a reason for that. There's a reason for that. So that's why these conversations are so important, because here's the other cool thing, you guys, is that we are never exactly in the same place. The exact same place as everybody else. Even though we might be sitting in the same ocean, we are definitely not in the same boat. Okay. We are all being moved by the same ocean, the same circumstances, the same weather, the same environmental factors, the same energetic factors. We are all being moved by exactly the same external factors in the world and in our lives. And sometimes you really have to kind of look down the line, and we can look at the themes or the energetics behind it that's moving us. So we are in the same ocean, but we are not in the same boat. By not being in the same boat simply means that we're not in the same body. Sometimes we're not in the same religion, the same culture, the same sexuality, the same economic circumstance. We are in different, I like to call them skin suits, right? We are in different vehicles, but we are so connected and things are much, much, much more similar than they are different. So when we begin to tune in and we listen from this place, we recognize that some people's boats are a little more upgraded than others. Some perhaps are a little bit farther ahead than others. And it's there that we can begin to look and to say, okay, so as I'm struggling, let's just say, with perhaps a breakdown in my primary relationship, maybe there's a pending separation or a divorce, is that I'm not the only one, is that there's others who are also currently navigating this, but likely from a different place. And so because it is so inherent within us to constantly be growing and evolving and progressing, would it not then be really helpful for us to look around and to say, okay, who else is doing this that is one step ahead, or perhaps 5 or 10 steps ahead of where I am, or at least maybe experiencing it from a different dynamic? And how can I begin to engage in a conversation or a dialogue with them to begin to expand my perspective? And as my perspective is expanded, it now increases my possibilities and my potentialities around different solutions to what I am currently seeing or assessing as a problem, right? So this is I will just say this is the primary purpose around why getting outside of our shell and expanding our circle, listening to other people speak, engaging in these types of dialogues, and not just staying in a very close-minded and binary day-to-day ritual. So maybe even just beginning by asking yourself right now, what are my rituals? And you might not even think of or consider these to be rituals, but what are the daily rituals that I am engaging in? Do you grab your phone off your side table when you first wake up in the morning? Do you consistently, you know, make the same type of coffee in your coffee maker, hit the same coffee shop on your way to work? What is it that you're doing? Are you reading and consuming news in exactly the same way? What's new? What's going on? Do you show up in the same clothing, the same conversations, the same office space every single day? Or does it feel different? Does it feel different? Or what are these rituals that are constantly creating, maybe on one hand, a sense of safety and a sense of certainty, which is extremely important in terms of creating a foundation for us where we feel, I'll say secure enough to be able to grow and to evolve in the world. But too much certainty stifles our creation and our ability to be creative. Too much safety keeps us stuck. It keeps us anchored. So where are you at with all of that? The conversation or the dialogue that I felt was really important for all of us today. And I say today, not just the day that I am recording this podcast, but today being the day that you're listening to it, is it's not talking about the purpose of safety and certainty and what can you rely on or ground into in your life, but rather the conversation that I wanted to have and to bring all of you into is the importance of reinvention, the importance of change, the importance of transformation, the importance of not keeping things the same. And in recognizing that that is the only way that we grow and evolve as individual, unique beings on this planet, but also as a collective, we also have to begin to ask ourselves what is necessary and what is required in order for me to move through the process of creativity and reinvention. And a huge part of that is letting go of our rituals, letting go of our habits, literally untying our boats from the docks and setting sail out into the water. And we know that the condition of the water can change at any point in time. And we know this because we've all done it. We have all set sail for big goals, for big dreams. We've all, you know, put our chips down on the table. We've engaged in relationships. We've accepted proposals. We've taken jobs. We've left home. We've done all of these different things that have brought us to where we are right now. And so as a result of that, there is a set and very well-formed group of beliefs that you have around change and around your own personal evolution and reinvention. And for every single person, we are going to hold beliefs that are going to sit in this camp that change is not good. Change creates discomfort. Change creates pain. Change indicates that there's death and that there's loss that has to happen. Change means that I'm going to have to leave people behind. Change means that I'm going to have to be financially, perhaps insecure for a period of time. Change means that I'm going to be alone. This is the truth of change, is that we must die and we must shed parts and aspects of our lives, parts of who we are, who we thought that we were, in order for us to become what is waiting for us in the next iteration or evolution of who we are. In fact, the body that you are in right now, the one who's listening, the ears that you are using in this moment, and the face that is attached to that, that's not the same face that you had when you were a baby or when you were a toddler or when you were a teenager. It's not even the same face that you had a year ago. It's different. And so it's changed. And the interesting thing And I always say interesting, and you probably hear me use the word interesting a million times because I like the word interesting. Interesting allows us to step into curiosity. It allows us to begin to dissolve a lot of the fear-based feelings that we have around perhaps approaching tender subjects. And reinvention is a tender subject. Why? Why is it tender? Because we are here to learn and to grow in relationship to others. Is that these relationships are so critically important in our development, because the relationships is where we experience love. It's where we experience the absolute depth and truth of who we are. And so then somewhere sewn or deeply stitched, we say in the yoga world, sutured into the very fabric of who we are, is that all of the love that we receive within the safety and the container of our relationship is that that is what is there for us to be fulfilled. And so if I'm going to change and grow, which starts to pull on the threads or the seams of that, because it naturally starts to change the dynamic of our relationship when I begin to evolve, is that there's a deep-seated belief within ourselves is that in me beginning to step away from or to evolve away from the dynamic of that relationship, that we believe that it indicates that that is a loss of love. That is a moving away from love. And sometimes we can back that up by putting ourselves into certain situations, which means that we leave home, we leave our parents, we leave the people that hold these safe, secure connections for us. And in doing that with, you know, again, I say these inherent mechanisms within ourselves, inherent for me means that it's unavoidable. It is a part of who we are from the moment that we come into this earth and onto this planet. There's nothing that we can do beyond that. But we do have these inherent mechanisms that really constantly spur growth. It pushes us outside of the comfort zone of relationship. And we undoubtedly will have the experience that as we change relationships and leave relationships, is that we will be leaving an aspect of the way that love was formed within that relationship behind. Because love is a noun, love is a verb, love is an adjective. But when we are so deeply entrenched in our humanity and we forget our spirituality, is that love is all about doing. Right? Love is about doing. It's about what people do for me that make me feel loved. And it's about what I do for other people that helps and causes them to feel loved. And so we get really caught in these tracks, these love tracks within relationships, and they become these automatic programs. And while that love-based program is running, there are many, many other programs that are running within ourselves. And one is that underlying and foundational program of growth. Tony Robbins calls it the growth or the program of progress, not of growth, but of progress. And that we always need to be progressing in order to feel happy. And this is where we experience the greatest suffering in our lives, is because we feel this ripping or this tearing apart, because there's the part of us that's like, to feel happy, I need to constantly be growing and progressing. But then the other part of ourselves, which is that conditioned program, is like, but to feel loved and to feel loving and to feel like I am loving, is that I have to stay here and I have to stay the same and I can't grow. And good God, I think about this right now, even as I flash back to the marriage vows that I took with my husband 21 years ago, is that I remember taking those vows, and somewhere within that, there was a seed that was planted between both of us that I promise to love you forever and ever and ever as you are right now, because that is the only one that I can promise that to. Right? This is the way that we give love within the context of this relationship. And I promise to bring you soup when you are sick. And I promise to provide financially for you, you know, in this way. And I promise, and I promise, and I promise to do all of these things. And we are making the promise to that person as they are in that moment at that altar. And we are absolutely not in those moments promising that I'm going to give you space to grow, that I'm going to encourage you to spread your wings and to experience all of the different forms and shapes and shades that love and service and spirituality can take. How many of us are afraid to do that within our own relationships because we don't want to rock the boat? Here we go back to the boat metaphor. I don't want to rock the boat. Why? Because that means that I might throw my partner out of the boat, right? If I stand up and say, oh, I'm ready to shake things up a little bit. What if me shaking things up a little bit and cutting my hair or changing my profession or deciding, I don't know, that I wanted to explore maybe some more wild and, I don't know, crazy concepts in my life. What if I do that and my partner doesn't recognize me anymore? Are they going to keep giving me love? Does this step outside of the container of marriage as I have agreed to? And so we really forsake the experience of growth and evolution to stay safe and to stay, interesting. The word that just came to me was restricted by love, to feel restricted by love. So what do? We don't ever reinvent ourselves. We stay the same and we become overgrown, right? Like, I don't know, I'm looking out my window right now as I record this podcast and I'm seeing evidence everywhere. It's fall. I'm seeing the trees, I'm seeing the plants in my garden that were so lush just a month ago. They were thriving just a month ago, but truth be told, they're overgrown now. This is a beautiful opportunity for me to be able to split some of those perennials, to place those, the wisdom of that into a new bed, putting that into a new bed, allowing it more space to be able to grow. And yet here I am just staring truthfully at what has really served its purpose, at what has run its course, because there's a death that is naturally beginning to take place within that and within relationship to the other plants around it and to the bed that it's in. It is, that plant is too big. And as extensions of everything that nature is doing, this is also who we are. What felt new and exciting and maybe a little scary at one point in time in your life eventually grew into something that felt lush and certain and flourishing. And now perhaps at this point in time in your life feels overgrown. It feels overdone. And it's not a way of saying, ugh, I don't like this anymore. This is old. This is ugly. This is not useful anymore. It's recognizing that it is time to reinvent and to repurpose all that we had learned and who we had become before. It's not getting rid of it. And this is one of the reasons why when I have spoken to people so many times over the years where they have been so afraid, they have come to these crossroads within themselves and within their relationships. And they're saying, I don't want to throw this relationship out, but I don't see any other way forward. And the greater belief that we have to look at within our culture anyway, more of this Western culture that we exist in, is that we kind of sit in this very binary, I'll say kind of good and bad, right and wrong, useful and useless. And if something is no longer useful in the way that it was at one time useful, then it must be useless. And so if we look at our relationships in this way, that this beautiful sacred container was a very useful place for us to grow and to experience love and harmony and peace and sensuality and creativity and sexuality and all of these things that we experience. As we use the container of that relationship to grow and to reach a specific peak state. And now we recognize that, wait a second here, I can't grow beyond this. So clearly that must mean that the relationship is no longer useful for me. I'm going to get rid of it because I can't see how it can be anymore. Is that I need to leave this relationship. And by relationship, I don't just mean leave this marriage. I mean, it's I have to leave this friendship. I have to leave this business partnership. I have to leave my family, my core family, my biological family, because they don't see the world the same way that I do anymore. It's no longer useful for where I desire to go and where I desire to be. To me, that is not the purpose of this spiritual journey. It's not leaving what we now deem as useless behind. It is exactly what I was sharing with you as I stare outside and look at this beautiful iris plant that is dripping and half dragging along the ground right now. I can look at it as dead and useless, or I can see that there is so much life. There's so much wisdom inside of those roots that I ask myself, what do I want to do with that? And so what I want to do with that is I want to split it. I want to divide it. I want to share it around. I want to do something that is absolutely incredible with that. So what are you going to do with all of those lessons that you have learned, experiences that you have had? What are you going to do with that in your life? Are you going to toss those out in the trash and say, that's meaningless? You know, that big thing that I went through, there's no value in that anymore. There's a tremendous amount of value in that. And in fact, I think one of the greatest places where we've, again, in this Western culture, really lost the value of wisdom is the evidence that we see with how we treat our senior citizens. When we look at so many other more ancient cultures, a lot of Eastern cultures, is that there's this beautiful relationship with their elders. In fact, and my husband and I took our kids just a few years back, and we spent a year living in Indonesia. We lived in the middle of a tiny little village surrounded by family compounds. And in the family compounds, one of the most inspiring things that we saw was the way that it was the elders that were raising the babies and the children. And it was the parents who were working, yes, to financially support the other members of the family, but they were also working to gain their experience of the world. And it was the elders who were receiving all of the beautiful energy and curiosity and light from the children. But what were the children receiving from the elders? They were receiving the medicine. The medicine was the wisdom of them having lived their lives and being able to share that back. And I think about, again, back into our culture right now, whose primary job is it to raise the children? It's the parents who are in the middle of the lesson themselves. And this isn't for a second forsaking the value that parents can share with their children. But sometimes it's a lot easier to share when we've actually been able to sail through the storm and we've learned how to do it and we arrive on the clear and settled waters on the other side. Because as the elders are sharing this with the children, they are still the light bearers, they're still the wisdom keepers and the pathfinders for their own children. They're doing it for those who are moving through, you know, their working years and their life as well. And we have lost that in our culture here. And as a result of losing that connection, you know, putting our seniors in seniors' homes, not listening to what it is that they're saying, is that we're also losing the way forward, meaning that we have lost the value of reinvention and the fact that our very journeys and being here as spiritual beings in a body is about a constant journey of reinvention. It's not this always swinging hockey stick curve upwards of, you know, we start with nothing, knowing nothing, and then we just one foot in front of the other consistently grow to the point where we experience success after success after success. No, God, no. I'm sure you realize this by now, is that while we've, many of us have experienced success on some level in our lives, if that's work, if that's relationship-wise, if it's your own personal health, and we've also experienced what it feels like to fall from that, right? To experience what, I mean, I don't perceive it as failure. I experience it as more learning and more growth, but you know, our society would say failure. You know, you win some, you lose some. And it's very much perceived, again, back to this binary on-off switch. It's a very low level of consciousness way of perceiving growth, is that everything is black and white. You're either winning or you're losing. You're either rich or you're poor. You are either in a loving relationship or you are out of it. When we begin to see things from the seat of the wisdom keeper, from the elders, from the more spiritually enlightened and advanced, is what we recognize is that in fact, it's not an off on. And I wish you could see my hands because I'm a huge hand talker right now. But in fact, every single flash of off and on, every single, I'll call it next and an elevated version of that is in fact an elevated version of that. Because we never succeed from the same place twice and we never fail from the same place twice. There's always growth that comes with that. Always, always, always. And that is in my heart and in my opinion, that is the greatest value of reinvention. Now, I had one of my students say to me a few years ago, she came into the center one day and she said, you know what, I have to talk to you about something really important. And I said, yeah, what's that? And she said, I'd love to sit down and have a conversation with you about failure because you're not afraid to try things and fail. And I paused for a moment when she said that. And there was the ego part of me that's like, is this a compliment or is this a huge knock? And maybe calling out all of these obvious so-called failures that I've experienced in my life. And so I had a really, really good giggle about that. And, you know, the funny piece is that we never did get to have that conversation. She ended up moving away shortly after that. But it is something that has not ever left my mind. It was, you know, we sometimes have those moments where people say things they think just very casually. And maybe if I went back to her, she would maybe never remember saying that to me. But it is something, it was seed that was planted, that was consistently watered for me every single day after that point, because it really sparked something within me. And it was around the concept and the idea of failure. And I think from a very conventional perspective, if I look back, there's lots of times that I have failed. In fact, when my kiddos were really, really little, I opened up a really small little yoga studio and I did a lot of Ayurvedic consulting out of there, taught meditation classes, yoga classes, you know, did all of the things. And I had it for about 2 years. And my youngest at the time was about 2 or 2.5. And I remember that I didn't hire anybody to help me. It was a one girl show. And so on one hand, I chose this smaller space because it felt easy for me on the days that I just wanted to lock the door and walk away, I could. Days that I potentially needed to cancel a class, they were nice and small. They were classes of 12 people or so. I could just do that. Very low risk, but at the same time, very low reward. So I was barely scraping by paying the overhead every single month. I certainly was not paying myself. I was there purely in service. And as a result of that, there was a lot of things that had to give. And a huge thing that had to give was the time that I was able to spend with my children. And gratefully at the time, we had a beautiful, and she's still an incredible member of our life and our family. We had brought a Filipino nanny. We had sponsored a beautiful nanny from the Philippines to come to Canada to help me to raise my children and to help my husband. He was very busy at the time as well, traveling quite a bit. And I mean, like I said, to this day, I am indebted for all of the gifts that she has shared. And with that also came a huge, listen to me, I can't even find the words right now. I'm sinking into the emotions. It came a lot of shame. It came a lot of shame for me that who I am is wrong and what I was doing was wrong. And leaving my kids at home for somebody else to raise them while I was out helping and supporting other people in a different way. And yes, I was grateful. There was something within me that couldn't not do that. I almost felt like it was beyond my control. The moment that I answered the call to help and support, I had to do it. I just did not understand yet because I did not have an elder. I did not have a mentor to really be able to walk me through that whole entire process. And so I struggled. I probably struggled more than anybody at that time. I struggled. I certainly was suffering more than my students were. And looking back, I was suffering more than my kids were. I was sacrificing myself to play this role. And I will never forget the moment of failure. We never, ever forget our moments of peak failure. And for me, it came in the form of a scam. And it was literally somebody who had sent me an email saying that he wanted to bring a group of people for a two-day retreat to the studio. And man, had he ever done a good job researching my business through my website, my social media. He knew who I was. He knew everything. And he wasn't just researching who I was. He had done his homework on the languaging, right, that we use in the spiritual world. And he had me hook, line, and sinker. He was going to send me some money ahead of time because there were a bunch of things that I needed to set up to prepare for this group to come in. And he was going to answer one of my biggest problems at the time, which was taking money and really seeing and feeling the value for what I was providing. And he said, listen, I want to pay you upfront. And I said, no, you don't need to pay me upfront. And he said, no, I see the value in what you are doing. I want to pay you upfront for everybody coming in. And I'm going to pay you for all of the supplies, for everything upfront. And so he sent me his credit card, and it took, there was something, you know, looking back, there was something in me that was like, this doesn't feel right. This doesn't feel right, but okay. So I took his credit card and I processed at the time what I think was around, I don't know, maybe $15,000 or so. I'm just trying to remember the dynamics of how everything had happened. It was around $15,000 or so. And the moment that I ran the credit card through, my instinct said something to the effect of, this isn't right. Something isn't adding up. So I immediately tried to cancel the transaction, and it wasn't canceling on my machine. So I called the bank, because I called the bank from the credit card. And I said, I want you to know that I just processed this transaction right now. And here is the person's name. Here's the address. Something in my gut doesn't feel right about this. And I'm trying to just cancel this transaction. And they said to me, thank you so much for calling in and doing this, because in fact, this is a stolen credit card. And I knew it, right? It is always that moment where it's like, I knew it, I knew it, I knew it. And they said, you know, there's nothing that we can do about this. I said, listen, I have his phone number. You can track him down. And they just said, I'm sorry, ma'am, but you know, this happens all day, every single day. And so I canceled the transaction, which he must have been clued in about that, because he called me about 10 minutes later and he said, is there something wrong with the credit card payment going through? And I said, yes, I lied. I said, there is, and I'm not really sure why, but it's not going through. And I noticed him starting to get frantic. Well, here's another credit card. Can you try to process this one? And I said, yeah, give me the number right now. And I did not put that into the machine, but told him over the phone. I said, yeah, for some reason, this isn't going through. Maybe it's a problem with my machine. And he started to get very, very angry with me. And at that point in time, I just thought, okay, I'm just going to hang up. So I hung up, I blocked his number, and, you know, I went home, I left the studio. I was talking to my husband, John, about this, and I had to flush out some of the emotions that I had around this. But in my mind, I was good. Everything was clear. We leave a couple of days later for Hawaii for my brother's wedding. And we go 2 weeks being in Hawaii. Everything is great. It's lovely. And then I get a phone call. And I get a phone call from the company that owns my payment processor. And they said, is this Mandy Trapp? And I said, it is. And they said, well, we have a question regarding a purchase that went through on your machine. And I said, okay, yes, thank you for calling. I said, I know exactly what that's about. And ultimately, what ended up happening in that conversation is that, yes, that was a fraudulent charge, but the one who was left on the hook because it went through was not him, it was me. Even though the money was reversed and it did not hit my bank account, it still was deducted from the account or from the credit of the person whose card was stolen. Now, I cannot to this day tell you how all of that happens because I don't know. I literally dropped to my knees in that moment because I realized that this money, and now I'm actually remembering at that time, it was far more than that. It was actually $25,000. It was not $15,000. It was $25,000 that went through. And I was on the hook for making that money up. Now, I was paying, like I had said, month to month in this space that I could not afford. I was certainly not paying myself. I didn't have $25,000 to be able to pay all of this money back. And I looked at my husband and he could see that my face was white as a ghost. And I said, I'm just looking at you. And I said, please tell me right now that everything is going to be okay, that I'm going to be able to recover from this loss, which to me felt, it felt massive. It felt huge. It was very relative to where I was business-wise at that stage in my life. And he just looked at me and he said, Mandy, I can't tell you that because I don't know. And I don't think that it is going to be okay. And he said, what are you going to do about it? And my entire stomach just sank down into my feet because I'm like, this is going to sink me. This is going to take me forever to be able to make this up again. And I just know that I won't be able to do this. And so in that moment, I had made the decision that, well, I'm going to have to figure out how to wind this business up to get out of, I was on a lease in this space, and I'm going to have to admit to people. And here I was also, I'm quite intuitive, but how I got scammed. And how am I going to admit to that failure and that failure that was nobody else's fault except my own? And I didn't want to have to do that. And so here's a very interesting piece around law of attraction. We get home and I'm ready to begin to start telling people of this. And I get there. And while I was gone for those 2 weeks, I had hired and had somebody coming in to teach all of my yoga classes for me and teach my meditation classes for me. And so when I walk into the studio, I see everything exactly as I had left it, even the things in the studio. And now, you know, when things kind of seem like, okay, well, things are out of place, or why is everything, why is the banana that I had accidentally left on the mat, you know, sitting at the front, why is it there with a whole swarm of fruit flies around it? Has there been nobody here? And I ended up calling one of my girlfriends who had been coming to the studio constantly for the classes. And I said, were you guys not running classes, or was there something that was happening? And I don't know. I just, even this moment, still kind of feel dumbfounded around it. And she said, no, we came. She goes, we came every day for the first few days, but nobody showed up to teach. And again, my stomach dropped all the way down towards my feet. And I thought, oh my God, how do I recover from that? How do I come back from now people who are angry and upset and I have to reimburse them, you know, for all of their classes, which was a couple $1,000 more that I didn't have, but also how do I get back their trust and their faith and their confidence in that? And I knew that it was time. And I went home and I had, you know, tears running down my face. And, you know, I said to John, I think I'm making the right decision, but I now also feel like my reputation is in the tank and I can't go in. And also at the same moment, I can't admit, you know, to whatever this online credit card scam was. I don't know what to do. And he said, I'm sure you're going to figure something out, which for the record was also what I did not want to hear. It's what none of us want to hear, but it was exactly what I needed to hear. And as I always believe that things happen in threes, what ended up happening was the nail in the coffin for me that night. And as I was trying to fall asleep desperately, tossing and turning, also wondering how I was going to tell my landlord that I could not fulfill the last year on my lease, is that I could hear my son, who was 2 at the time, crying in the middle of the night, having a nightmare. And I walk into his room, and he was quite infamous for having night terrors to the point where he didn't know, you know, which way was up or down or who was coming to him or who wasn't coming to him. And I just very quickly put my hand onto his back and just started to rub his back. And I said, it's okay. It's okay. You know, mommy's here, mommy's here. And he kept pushing me away, pushing me away. And I said, it's okay, my love. It's mommy. Mommy's here. And he finally pushed me back and he said, I don't want my mommy. He said, I want Marlon. And Marlon was our nanny at the time. And I paused. I froze. I think the look on my face probably froze. All of the color in my face left. I'm still feeling into that experience here right now. And I stood up and I walked out of the room and I went back into my bed and I just started to cry. Because in that moment, I felt like a failure as a business owner. I felt like a failure as a teacher. And I felt like a failure as a mother. I felt in that moment that there was no other possible way that I could fail that would bring me to a place that felt any lower than that. And I was sitting in the deepest, deepest place of shame that I didn't even want to bring anybody else into it to help to support me to get out of it. I couldn't. But I had to put one foot in front of the other and I had to call the landlord. I had to let them know that I was moving on. They were so gracious. We worked something out. And my family, who is always there to rescue me, said, we'll help you. We'll help you move your things out. They came the next weekend. We took out couches and chairs and truckloads of yoga mats and everything that we had to take out of there. And at the very end, I was the last person that went to close that door. And would you know it? But I left things behind. I left some things in that space. I left some beautiful glass cabinetry. I left a handful of things that I knew that even though as I was closing that door, I thought I'll come back for that one last trip. I couldn't do it. I could not do it because I couldn't say goodbye. I was in such a deep and low place sitting in that moment of failure. And it would take me a long time to realize that that very moment that felt like a rock bottom for me was the most solid foundation that allowed me to build and to rebuild and to reinvent what I feel was then the start of the greatest version of who I am and what I have to offer the world. Because of that moment and reaching that peak bottom, there was not a decision that was made after that where I felt that I was compromising my children, that I was compromising my students, my clients, that I was compromising business and what I felt business should be, is that I've consistently made decisions from that place. And you know where it all begins is it begins with me, because I'm like, I don't want to feel like this ever again. This feels awful. This feels actually like worse than awful. So if I'm going to reinvent myself, the choices that I'm going to make, I can already guarantee myself that I'm not going to slip back into this place of shame. But I didn't rise from that into a place of peace and freedom. It would take me many years after that point in time, 10 years, as a matter of fact, after that point in time to experience what I don't know, some people perhaps thought was my next failure. 10 more years to experience my next failure, but everything in between those 10 years was one more inch forward of success. And it was moving up what for me has been a very tangible scale, because I moved from shame, and even though it might not seem like a point of success, but I moved into guilt. And I moved into the guilt of, okay, well, this means that I'm going to have to work a little bit harder. This means that I'm going to have to make a few more sacrifices, but do it in a bit of a different way. And I then kind of moved into this point of, I always call it my bowling ball years with the bumpers on the bowling alley. And I knew that while I was moving out of shame, that I'd have to move through guilt, and that then I'd have to move through grief, and then I'd have to move through jealousy, and then I'd have to move through anger, and then I'd have to move through fear. I know the scale and I know the path very, very well. And I knew that guilt would be there. And so I embraced it with open arms on my pathway of reinvention. And I just didn't allow myself to sit in it for very long. And what that looked like was like me being that beautiful little bowling ball going down the alley, that on one bumper on the one side was my family and my kids. And the bumper on the other side was my work and my service to the world. And the only way that I would allow myself to feel when I've gone too far so that I don't slip back into the gutter would be to bump up against that bumper. And so while I say that I was this ball for years, kind of experiencing this guilt of back and forward, the guilt would only kick in when I actually hit the bumper. So a huge example of that would be all of the summers that I spent, you know, the kids were home from school and I would say, oh, you know, this is going to be a summer. I'm going to spend more time with my kids and I'm going to do all of these fun things. But every time I would lean too much into spending that time with the kids, I'd bump up against that work guilt bumper, going, I should really be spending a little bit more time on my business. I should be spending more time focusing on my community and my students. And so I would allow that bump to correct my course and to say, okay, thank you, universe, for not throwing me back into the gutter of shame, but to showing me where now I can course correct. And that's exactly what I would do. And I did like a beautiful little ping pong ball, you know, back and forth. And I can say this with some joy right now, but, you know, hitting the bumper is not always comfortable. And with that, you know, came, of course, some emotion and some anger and some frustration, a lot of frustration, as a matter of fact. But I never let myself get stuck or down on myself. I always recognize that that guilt was a step ahead of shame. And isn't it interesting how people want to project their state onto yours? Because I had a lot of people who would say to me, like, don't you feel bad? Don't you feel like the worst mother ever? You know, that you're going away, you know, for this week or this weekend, and you're doing this and, you know, you're missing soccer, or you're missing that. And I would never let myself feel bad and feel ashamed for what I was doing, because I realized that what I was doing was a choice. And as I recognized that I had choice, I always had the choice to make a different choice. And so I made that choice very consciously. It's like, no, this is where I feel that I need to be right now. And then there were also times where I would, you know, be more with my children, be more with my family, spend more time nurturing myself, more time on self-care. And that too was a choice. It is a part of the reinvention. And so that would go on, the guilt, back and forth for the next 10 years until COVID hits. And the next iteration of my studio or center was not a small little 800, 900 square foot space, but it was a 3,600 square foot space. And now I had staff, and now I had contractors, and now I had all of these people that relied and depended on me. And it was quite a funny thing, you know, when I chose to open that. It was interesting, some people who were in my life, you know, family and friends, you know, the first go around 10 years previous to that, saying, oh God, are you sure you want to do this again? Mandy, you remember what happened last time? Remember what happened last time you had that studio? You know, whatever version of the story they knew about, some of them knew about the failure of the studio because I was a mother. Some knew the failure because, you know, business owner and shitty decisions that way. Some might have known that failure to come from the teacher-student relationship. But whatever story they carried with them is that they were projecting it, and rightfully so, right? They were projecting it into these new, much more inflated and grander plans that I had for the next center, the next studio. And they said, are you sure that you want to do this right now? And the reason why I wanted to do that was the exact same reason why I did it the first time, is because there was something inside of me, my gifts, my talents, my passions, my inherent purpose on this planet to help and to serve people in this way, to bring people together in community so that they're not alone on the spiritual path. It was the exact same reason, but I knew that I would not experience the exact same failures. But I also knew that failure was imminent. because failing is necessary in growth. Because to me, all that failing means is that we try something that does not work. But everything that we are trying, it's only one way. And so when I think about failing, it's not failing in my mission. It's failing in the way by which I go to achieve that mission. But if I fail at one way, it doesn't mean that that's the only way. And so here I was trying a new way, trying a different way. And I did try it a new and different way. You know, yes, it was bricks and mortar again. Literally, it was a brick building. So yes, it was bricks and mortar again, but I was doing it differently than I was doing it before. And with that came a lot of beautiful success. And with that, when COVID shut, also came a choice that I made to shut it down and to close it down. And as some people said, wow, you know, your studio model failed again. Again, I don't see it as a failure. I see it as trying it one way within the greater environment. And that way didn't work to meet the need or to serve the purpose. And so I tried another way. And so I tried another way to go online. And it doesn't mean that I'm a failure of a teacher. It doesn't mean that I'm a failure as a business owner. And it doesn't mean that, you know, again, the bowling ball years of going back and forth that in some level are still there, where the guilt has shown up. It doesn't mean that I'm failing as a parent. It means that I am not afraid to try new things and to constantly reinvent myself. Right? And I think what gives me the greatest confidence to be reinventing the way that I'm showing up in the world is because I'm still so connected and so tied to the purpose and to the why I am doing this. So when it comes to reinvention, what gives us the confidence to step away from that way, from that path, from that relationship, the way that it has been constructed, is that we have to be so clearly and deeply connected to why it's important that we do. Why is this so important that we try this? And if we're not connected to the why, and you know what the cliche is that when we know what the why is, we can bear almost any how. So for you, when you know what your purpose is as a parent, when you know what your purpose is as a service provider in the world, when you know what your purpose is as a spiritual being that is here, is that we can't bear almost anyhow, which means we can try any path, and every path is going to be embedded with pain and with discomfort, but also with peace and with joy. And all of that is love. All of it is love. Even, I don't know about you, but for me, the greatest love that I've experienced in this world has come from those moments of pain. It's come from the moments of such severe discomfort, because it's not in what I'm doing. It's in who is showing up there to help and to support and to show me what love really is and what it really feels like. In fact, love is the only thing that survives change. Love is the only thing that survives death. I think about one of my best friends, my dearest friends, Cody Hodgson. And so Cody passed from this side of the veil, I say, to the other side just over 3 years ago. Cody was my very first guest on my very first podcast, February 19th, 2019. He and I recorded and published an episode together, and you can find it in the archives if you go back on this podcast to the very first one. Now, the audio is really crappy, but again, that's all about growth and evolution. I have a microphone this time. It's amazing. I'm not sitting in an echoey meditation studio. And so when we talk about reinvention, and this is interesting because I'm coughing, talking about Cody. I say interesting because oftentimes when spirit comes through for me, I always cough or I start to yawn. So thank you, Cody, for being here right now. In all of the great ways that he comes through. That's my own little sidebar on that. But when we talk about reinvention, are we not talking about getting better and better, getting more dialed in, getting more tuned in every single time? This is the process of life. Not one of us comes out of the womb knowing how to walk. And when we walk, we don't know how to run. And when we run, we don't know how to dance quite yet or to swim or to do all of the cool things that we do is that we continue to improve over and over and over again. And this is one of the greatest things that Cody really taught me, is that life is about improving and life is about evolving. And in order to do that, is that we must allow certain aspects of our lives to die and to be shed. And so for the people who I speak to, and many, many people who I speak to on this planet who say, I'm not really sure if I believe in reincarnation, right? Like reinvention, we can wrap our heads around, but reincarnation, I'm not really sure what I think about that. And I say, okay, maybe there's a potential, maybe, that we can just start here and we can look at this one life. And as we really begin to observe and to understand all of the ways that we have been born again within the context of just one life, then maybe we can begin to explore what that looks like between lives and beyond lives. But for us to simply trust in reincarnation without really understanding or seeing evidence in life after death, is it really begins to, I want to put this into words so badly, but I'm just feeling this. I know people who so blindly trust that reincarnation is real, but they don't ever allow themselves to really understand why they believe that and to look at the evidence of it, because that is actually the most important part. The most important part isn't you just believing in reincarnation. The most important part is asking yourself, why do I believe in it? And where is the evidence that proves to me that life is possible after death? Because when we contemplate these questions and when we come up with answers for ourselves, this is where we begin to ease the suffering in our lives that we are experiencing while we are still here. Because believe it or not, one of the greatest reasons why you suffer, why all of us suffer on this planet, is because of change. It's because of change and the process of change, which always requires death. Always. So there's a lot of things that we hold on to. There's so many things that we hold on to in our lives that are dead. They no longer serve the same purpose for us. I don't want to say that they no longer serve a purpose, because everything serves a purpose that's here, even if it is dead, even the dead trees or the dead animals, right? The dead, rotting, decaying tree stump in the forest serves an incredible purpose for the rest of the forest. The dead animal on the side of the road still serves a purpose. There's life, there's nutrients, there's energy, there's wisdom, there's still purpose in that death. And so we have to understand for ourselves is that when we begin to think about this idea, and I'm going to take it back from reincarnation, but into reinvention. And then I'm going to explain the difference between both. But if we look at reinvention, the purpose of death is that it gives us a new platform or a new foundation to stand on, so that as we are quote unquote starting over, we are not starting over from scratch. We are now starting over from experience. Is that it's never brand new in the same way that it was when it was an original idea. Okay, so reinvention simply refers to our ability, if you will, here within the context of this life, with the materials that we currently have, is how can I repurpose? How can I reuse? And how can I reinvent what is already here right now? That is what reinvention is all about, right? And in order to reinvent anything, is that there has to be an original set of material. This is what allows us to be able to go into reinventions. There has to be something. There's a give me something to work with, people. So if we're constantly throwing everything out and scrapping, you know, these old relationships that we release or we let go of, and we think, oh my God, that was awful and toxic, and that was such a bad experience, and I never, ever want to think about that relationship again, we are throwing out the greatest value of what we learned and the material that we have to work with on the other side of that. This is what reinvention is all about. And so reincarnation is obviously when we move between lifetimes. And so if you look back at a lot of different wisdom traditions, the one that I follow and that I've been initiated into and educated in is the Vedic tradition. And when we look back through that lens or through those perspectives, is that we still have material to work with because we gain new experiences in every single lifetime. And so instead of just limiting it to one lifetime, is that we begin to accumulate these through multiple lifetimes. So, I mean, it always begs the biggest question is like, okay, well then when did all of that start? When was the beginning of it? When was the very first incarnation of my soul? And I'm not sure that I know the answer to that question. I'm not really sure anybody knows the answer to that question, just because we are so multidimensional. And perhaps I should leave that conversation for another podcast altogether. However, I bring this up because if you are somebody who is reincarnation curious, right, you think you believe in it, or, you know, you have your own physical evidence of it, is that it would then maybe bring a little bit more understanding to why, even from being children, we have certain aversions to certain things, or we have draws or desires to certain things or people or places, perhaps even why we have specific talents and gifts that from very young seem very well tuned, that it almost doesn't make any sense when we see, you know, a child who's just that natural, say throwing a football or playing a guitar or singing or so incredible with numbers and calculating things in their head, is that we have to ask, well, where or when did all of these different qualities or attributes really become mastered, right? Was it in this lifetime where I received mastery, or was it from other lifetimes that I'm carrying this forward, right? So if we lean into reincarnation, it would mean then that not every single one of us is born with a clean slate, and then we're just moving through, you know, brand new experience, which then we have the opportunity to reinvent again and again. It's that somewhere behind all of that is that we do have this huge, huge world of experience and wisdom that we're bringing forward. And why is all of this important? Well, whether you believe in reincarnation or only reinvention, in my opinion, it doesn't matter. I tell people all the time, I don't care if you don't believe in reincarnation. We have more than enough material to work with here in this lifetime with respect to reinvention. But when we actually begin to look at this and we recognize that who I am today is not the exact same person that I was yesterday or last year or even 10 years ago, and that in order for me to be sitting here listening to this podcast right now, it means that a huge part of me had to change, that I had to evolve. And then if we really get contemplative about it, we can ask ourselves, so in order for me to be here now in this building, in this body, right, in this situation, what part of me had to die, or what part of me had to be surrendered in order to be here now? That is the most important question. Because with our greatest fear being the fear of change, ultimately what we're really talking about is the fear of death. Not many people are afraid of newness and rebirth and having, I'll call them, greater, more abundant experiences in life. But most people are afraid of dying, are afraid of what death means or what we think that it could mean, which means never again and never more. And so if we break that down, we ask ourselves first and foremost is, what do we lose through the process of death? What do we lose? What do we give up through the process of death? And like literally ask yourself that question right now, right? What do we lose when we die? And you can say within this lifetime, when my business dies, when my relationship is dead, what do we lose? And then if you want to look at the greater purpose, or the greater purpose, I should say, the greater picture, the bigger picture, and all of this as well, when we, you know, kind of formalize as humans, you know, what death is, and it's ceasing to live, ceasing to be existent, is what do we lose when we die? What do we lose when somebody else dies? And so my favorite part of that question is then backing it up with the other side of the coin and saying, and what remains? What survives death? So what survives the death of your relationships? What has remained within you since being a child is your body and is the cells in your body. Did you know that in just under an hour, there's over 1 million brand new cells in your body because we have literally shed over 1 million cells in our body? Our body is constantly dying. Cells are dying to give way to the birth of brand new cells. So when you even think about yourself in your own life and the amount of death that has had to happen physically, mentally, and emotionally for you, what has survived? What has survived? I know for me, what has survived is this curiosity and this wonderment that I have with the world. I tend to see things through, I don't know, for me, it feels like the eyes of wonder and magic. And I'm quite a playful person and I've been very playful, I don't want to say since I was a kid, my whole entire life. Very, very connected to that. So it, you know, there's been days, there's not so many of those days anymore, but when my kids were younger and I was jumping around or dancing in the kitchen or doing cartwheels, and they'd say, "Mom, you're supposed to act more like a mom." And I'm like, "What does that mean? I don't understand what that means." And I mean, of course, they're getting their impression from what they're watching and who they're watching and different ideals. But it's just me. I'm like, I am a mom. But there's a huge part of me that has not died since I was a kid, and I refuse to let that part of me die. So when we ask, is there such thing as life after death? Do you not think if we just simply examine this life that we're in right now, that there is more than enough evidence of life after death? Because we're experiencing it here now. And if we're experiencing it here now, then what might be possible for after I take my last and final breath out of this body and I'm no longer materialized or physicalized here on this plane? What might be possible? And who knows? Who knows? I mean, this podcast is kind of creeping on and lengthier right now. And I really wanted to share with you a bigger and a deeper experience that I have had, how I, in fact, know that there is such thing as life after death as a direct experience, not only, you know, being somebody who talks to dead people, but I've had my own near-death experience, and it is something that I will share in a separate podcast, because I feel for the purpose of this one and what's really present in the field right now is less about that and reincarnation, and it's more about reinvention. It is more about reinvention. And we are reinventing ourselves on a mass global scale right now. So we are required to reinvent the way that we think, the way that we govern ourselves. So that we think politically, because what has worked, I suppose, and I'll use that word lightly, but what has worked, you know, to get us here is not what's going to work to carry us forward and to keep moving us to a much greater and higher place of possibility. It just simply won't. And we can look at some of our other systems that are under reinvention right now, being the education system. I was just listening to a podcast this morning myself that was talking about the significant decrease in post-secondary applications now. And when we start to look at what are the reasons for that, well, one of the reasons is because we have so much access to free online knowledge. I mean, you can take courses from Yale, from Harvard, from Stanford online for free. So why in the world, you know, in a lot of ways and in a lot of fields, would you spend the time, the energy, and the money to go to school and to put yourself in debt learning? It's not any less valuable. They're coming from the exact same institutions, but there's a huge reinvention around the delivery system of this information. We're being asked right now in a massive way to reinvent how we think of healthcare, medical care, sick care. What is it? How are we doing this? How are we serving people? What is health? What is illness? We are reinventing not just the system, but we're reinventing our ideals around health and well-being. And so naturally, because the ideas are being reinvented and ideas are then, which become things, is that then the things, the structures and the resources are going to naturally have to be reinvented as well. religion is being reinvented right now. Why? Because we've seen so many churches in the way that they have ruled has come from a place of, as I was sharing earlier, a lot of shame, a lot of guilt, a lot of fear. And as we within ourselves begin to grow and evolve, is that we no longer accept that in our communities and in our systems. And so what so many people on the planet are seeking, they're still seeking community. They're still still seeking spiritual influence in their life, but not in the same way. So it's calling spiritual leaders to reinvent themselves. It's calling these different religious organizations and structures to reinvent themselves. My own spiritual center that my husband and our kids and myself have been attending for the last 20 years, known as the Center for Spiritual Living, the one that we attend here in our city in Edmonton, is that they have for the last 2 years been without a minister. So on one hand, I feel very grateful because I've been asked on several occasions to come in and to deliver the Sunday talk, but they've just recently landed a brand new minister and I have not met him yet. But when I asked one of the community members just yesterday, you know, how is he? Like, what's he like? She's like, oh, Amanda, you're really going to like him. You know, he's different. He has a ponytail. I loved that. He has a ponytail and he prefers not to be behind the book, but to be out in nature and to be learning. And she's like, you know, there's going to be a lot of people who are older in this community who aren't going to like it and they're going to leave. And she's like, and that's okay. She said, but he's also going to bring a lot of newer people in. And I said, is this not just perfect? I mean, this is reinventing not the primary purpose of the message, but it's in how we are delivering that message and also how we are receiving that message. So reinvention is everywhere. But the point that I am trying to make for all of you, well, actually the few points that I'm trying to make. So let me just take that back a second here. But the very first point that I'm trying to make is that reinvention is not something that you decide to just get up and do one day and it's like, ah, my life is miserable or it feels stagnant. I'm going to reinvent myself. The primary point that I'm trying to make is that we are always under reinvention. And it is just a natural and inherent part of who you are. There are mechanisms within our bodies and within our minds as we reach different states in our evolution that things take over. Right? Think about a prepubescent kid where their voice starts cracking. You don't have any control over that. Reinvention is happening all the time. The thing is that you and I have a choice about how much or how little we choose to participate in the reinvention. So when we choose to participate with resistance, I will say, by bracing, by clawing, by digging our heels in and trying to resist it, then the experience that we are going to have is going to feel like that. It's going to feel hard. It's going to feel hard. It's going to feel heavy. It's going to feel all sorts of, you know, kind of yucky words, tight, restrictive, limited on all sorts. Oh man, I'm just like imagining this picture right now. It's like, God, I need to limit or I need to, there we go, Freudian slip. I need to reinvent myself, but you know, because of who I am and where I came from, like I have a very small, narrow window of possibility. And we all have thought that about certain things in our lives, right? Haven't we? Right? You get divorced when you're 50 and you have, you know, three kids and a pile of debt and everything is like, God, I need to reinvent myself and in my relationship, but I'm broken or I'm damaged goods, or I come with all of this baggage. Look at you, you're already renegotiating and you're downplaying what is possible for you right now. Because we can do that through the process of reinvention, or we can say, oh my God, here I am. I have so much learned and lived experience and wisdom, knowing that I am starting over, not from scratch, but from experience. What do I know? Where have I begun to step up the ladder? Because if last time my experience was embedded in shame, this time I'm going to try on guilt. And I'm going to try on guilt with the intention of moving above guilt into maybe a little bit of jealousy. right? Now I'm actually doing things and I'm jealous of people who are doing a little bit more, but I'm going to let that motivate me so that I can move into frustration and from frustration into anger. Like, why am I trying this? Why am I not doing this yet? But you see, every one of those emotions is a rung on the ladder that is helping us to dig our way out bit by bit and reinvent ourselves to the point where eventually what happens is that we move into courage. And courage is the tipping point, you guys. The moment that you start to embrace courage of reinvention, this is where shit starts to get real and where real possibility starts to open up for us. Because now I have the courage to succeed, but I also have the courage to fail my way through it. Because with that failure, I realize that it's actually not failure. It's more learning. It's more lessons. It's more people that I get to meet, more people that get to know who I am, more things that I get to accumulate that are going to help me to then move above that into those higher experiences of freedom and of joy and happiness. But this is the pathway up. And you can either move with your process of reinvention, or you can move without it. You can move against it. And I know what I'm doing here right now, which is exactly why this is not the very first episode of the Mandy Trapp podcast. This is, in some ways, the 9th episode of the original podcast. This is, I don't know, I need to do some really quick math here. How many ever, let me get my calculator, 365 times almost 6 years. Let's see. Holy cow. I probably have around 2,000 episodes of Soulful Sunday. Wow, that actually shocks me right now. Thank you for bearing with me while I open my calculator. So this is like the 2009th episode, but the me that is arriving here right now is arriving here in gratitude. I'm arriving here with courage. I'm arriving here with confidence. I'm arriving here with vulnerability and curiosity about where all of this is going to go and how it's going to go. I don't know that yet. All that I know is that I don't need to do this afraid and wondering if it's going to work, because I know that everything in my life that I have worked has consistently worked. It's taking me forward step after step, day after day. And the progress that I feel is the success that I'm after. And I don't only feel this for myself, but I feel this for you too. So thank you for being here. Thank you for being a part of this journey, whether this is your day one or your day 2009. I'm so deeply grateful for you listening here today and taking this message to heart for yourself, because this isn't just my reinvention, this is yours. And I can't wait to see where it takes you. Blessings, my friends.